Welcome to the Talent Development Hot Seat Podcast, the number one podcast for learning and talent development professionals. Now here's your host, Andy Storch.
Welcome to the Talent Development Hot Seat Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Storch, and I'm excited that you're joining me today for another great conversation and episode to help you up your game and improve your capabilities in the world of talent development. And I've got an interesting and great discussion for you today about culture. Before I get to that, just want to say I just got back from two pretty awesome conferences that were in the HR and talent development realm. The first one was the HR Congress World Summit in Porto, Portugal, just a couple weeks ago, where I met and heard from several different CHROs, heads of culture, heads of talent, some really interesting sessions. I didn't get to attend or listen in on too many because I was actually a moderator and a facilitator there, and I was introducing speakers and moderating sessions and panels. And so I got to listen to some things, but I was also kind of in preparation mode, like waiting to make sure that I had the timing and everything. People were mic'd up, ready to go, and that we were asking good questions, getting good questions from the audience. I would say there's some interesting discussions that came out of that, and many of the speakers that I connected with, I have already asked them if they would come on as guests on this podcast to share some of the insights and things that they had been talking about at the conference. Almost all of them have agreed, and many of them have already scheduled interviews. So I'm looking forward to bringing those to you in the future. The other conference that I attended the next week was the big ATD, Association of Talent Development Conference, Global Expo in New Orleans, Louisiana. I think there were 9,000 people there, I heard. It just seemed absolutely massive. But it also felt small because I knew so many people there from our community, the Talent Development Think Tank community. We probably had at least 15 members, if not more, from our community there, and just kept running into friends everywhere, either from the community or from LinkedIn. So that was really cool. Great keynotes from Matthew McConaughey. It was more of a discussion. Daniel Pink, who was phenomenal in his keynote, and then Venus Williams was the closing sort of conversation about her life and lessons and things like that. And all of those are great, but I really was impressed with Daniel Pink because he gave the only, I'd say, traditional, true, like stand-up keynote there, you know, giving lessons. Not that Matthew McConaughey and Venus Williams sessions didn't have some lessons in them, but, you know, Daniel was more of a traditional keynote, and me being a keynote speaker as well, I always love watching and hearing from other speakers and seeing what they do well. And what he did really well was bring energy. The speaker right before him was pretty low energy, and he came in and brought the energy, brought a lot of humor, and really brought some practical advice that people could use, which I appreciated. I may do a post about that talk in the near future. I attended some sessions that were run by friends of mine so I could support them. I had two sessions that I gave at ATD, and I'll do maybe a separate episode to recap those. And it was just great networking. I hosted a happy hour again for Talent Development Think Tank community members and guests on the second day, and just connected with so many great people there doing interesting things in the talent development world. And we'll get some of them on this podcast in the future as well. So really great experience attending those conferences. I always love going to conferences to meet people in person, learn new things, that sort of stuff. But we can also do a lot of this stuff virtually. And I'm providing that as a resource, you know, for members of our community, the Talent Development Think Tank community. I started back in 2020 after our first conference when the pandemic hit, and I saw we weren't going to go to conferences again for a while. So I launched the community, and that's still going strong. So if you are not able to make it to conferences and you're looking for a place to network, connect with people, learn and grow on a regular, ongoing basis, come check out the Talent Development Think Tank community. We have calls twice a month with guest speakers on different topics. And if you do like going to conferences, we do have one coming up. The Talent Development Think Tank Conference is coming up on November 6th and 7th in Orlando, Florida. You can find all the information on both at tdtt.us. That's tdtt.us. And for at least a limited time, you can use the code HOTSEAT for 10% off of your purchase, your membership. All right, with all that out of the way, I want to get to my guest and conversation today, which is all about culture and DEI. My guest today is Mitchell Kenyon Davis, who is a culture transformation and DEI executive coach and strategic partner. Most recently, Mitchell was leading global culture and DEI programs at Autodesk and also consults with other organizations in the tech, finance, automotive, hospitality, and public sectors. Mitchell's master's degrees focus on international development and healthcare and emotional intelligence, coaching, and leadership development. Mitchell is a certified coach by the International Coaching Federation with over 400 hours of executive coaching experience and certified in the Intercultural Development Index, Design Thinking, ProSci Change Management, Berkman Coaching, Harvard Management and Membership, Situational Leadership, and Speaking with Impact. With 11 years additional experience leading international teams in sales, corporate social responsibility, and entrepreneurial operations, Mitchell brings unique business insights to the work they do now. An interesting part of Mitchell's background and story and how they and I met is that Mitchell is an American like myself who moved to Europe many years ago and now lives in Barcelona and has nationalities from the United States and Spain. Although Mitchell likes to call themselves a citizen of the world. When I originally got Mitchell's bio, it said Mitchell is a proud gay man and leverages his own personal journey to empathetically build bridges across differences. His passion and talent for breaking down barriers to new learning opportunities creates conscious human connection. And I was almost thrown for a small little loop because I actually had dinner with Mitchell the night before we recorded this interview, and Mitchell informed me that he or they were changing their pronouns from he, him to they, them, embracing their identity as non-binary. So I thought that was an interesting change and just kind of a sign of where we are in the world. Things are changing all the time. People are learning more about themselves and their identities. And I do ask Mitchell about that in this interview. So we will talk about Mitchell and the journey they have been on, as well as the importance of defining culture and how to impact and change culture in an organization. We'll also talk about what's going on in the world of DEI and some of the challenges that are out there, some of the great things that some organizations are doing. And finally, as we are publishing this during June, which is known as Pride Month in many places around the world, I also ask Mitchell what they think about the state of LGBTQ equality and pride in general. So without further ado, here is my interview with Mitchell Kenyon Davis. Enjoy. All right, I'm joined now by my friend Mitchell Davis, who is a cultural transformation and DEI executive coach and strategic partner. Mitchell, welcome to the podcast.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, I'm excited to have this conversation with you. You know, for those listening, Mitchell is a new friend. We got connected recently by our mutual friend, Adam Waltz, because we both live in Barcelona. We've gotten a chance to get together a couple of times to get to know each other. And I'd be really fascinated with your point of view on things like culture and DEI and really like human, so many different human elements and psychology and the way you think about employee experience and how people fit into the workplace and the world. And I'm excited to dive into some of those topics today. But before we get into that, I'd love to start with a little bit of your background, because I know you've been on quite a journey in your life from growing up in a small conservative town in Missouri to where you are today in Barcelona. And I'm wondering, how has that journey shaped who you are today and the type of work that you do?
Well, it has everything to do with who I am today. As I say to my friends, if I would have never decided to come to Barcelona, I don't know where I would be. In fact, I don't even know if I would be alive, which is really important that I have decided to live my truth in an authentic way. And that has led me to my work, because I was really always interested in creating equity and opportunity for other people. And it also helps fill my cup, of course, you know, making change. I do the exact opposite of what I experienced in my little small town in Missouri: homophobia, transphobia, racism, all those things. You know, unfortunately, those things still exist in the world, as you know, and I'm working now to fight against that.
Yeah, I was going to say, I know you are quite a DEI advocate and you've had your own experience growing up and you sort of coming out of the closet, right, to be a gay man, and then, you know, recognizing who you are today. I know you've probably faced a lot of discrimination, prejudice in your life, and that's influenced the transformation you've gone through, and probably also your work and the passion you have for DEI. I wonder if you could talk about that.
Yeah, and if you don't mind, I think we have our relationship now, Andy. I'm just going to correct you on one thing, which is that you said that I came out of the closet as a gay man, which is true. And then just recently, as we were just discussing privately, I recently came out as also a non-binary person. So being that, I guess I'm sort of pansexual. So yeah, all of those things.
Right.
And what was your question? Sorry.
Well, how does that influence your desire, your passion, your work in the DEIB space and wanting to advocate for others?
Well, I think many DEI practitioners have their own beautiful story that really drives them and gives them passion. And that is the same case in my case, as we had just discussed. So when I think about my programs, I have a unique lens that offers me to be empathetic, to consider difference in a new way, because I've had to consider my own difference and how that fits into society and corporations and ultimately the world.
I love that. And so in addition to DEI, you've done a lot of work in the culture space, and you've most recently led global culture as well as DEI at a global software company. And I'm wondering, what does that mean when you talk about leading global culture, and what are the things that you think about that go into influencing the culture in a large company?
Well, just to for your listeners to understand, culture, it can mean all kinds of things, right? It's there's sort of surface level culture and a deeper understanding of culture. It could be your identity from your nationality, it could be your belief systems, how your family has influenced you, where you have lived. In my case, having lived between Europe and the United States, I have a multicultural background. And so when we think about a company, that's the same case. It's a organized human-centric approach to culture. We need to think about how all these people around the world are going to need to act, behave, and ultimately show up for the company. Also, one thing that's important about culture is it's very strategic. Peter Drucker, I don't know if you know him, he said, "Culture eats strategy for breakfast." I love that quote. I think he is right. Because honestly, if we don't have an organization of people who are following and sort of rowing in the same direction, then we're going to have an issue with what we want to accomplish as an organization. So any company, when they think about their strategy, they need to think about in parallel always really be strategic about their culture. And that's how I or where I come in. We look at the different identities across the world. We look at how those identities actually play into the way that we might expect employees to act. And we'll need to then design a culture that encompasses all of that difference. I love this phrase, different together. So, in order for us to actually create impact through the company and follow our strategy, we need to make sure that culture is aligned and it's considering all that difference. One issue that I see with many companies, and including the software company you mentioned, is oftentimes a company is made in a particular culture and then they grow and they don't change their culture. So, in order to create real effectiveness and productivity and ultimately money for an organization, you need to then adjust your culture and make changes. And that requires change management, communication, training, data gathering, understanding how, okay, as I go across the world, let's say we move from the United States to Spain. Well, having moved here yourself, there's a lot of difference in the way that people think and act and show up professionally, how they think about leadership, how they think about career development, how they think about generally themselves in a company, what they can do. So that's really important when we talk about that topic.
You're right. Culture can be influenced by, and it can also mean many different things. There's company culture, there's culture by country and region. Obviously, race and all different types of people that gather together can have their own cultures. I'm curious, kind of sidebar, you mentioned, moving from the US to Spain, which I did last year. You've been here quite a bit longer than me. And someone actually asked me yesterday, what was the biggest difference you've noticed in culture between the US and Spain? And I had my own answer, but I'm curious, what would you say to that for those listening that maybe have moved countries or haven't moved countries and are always curious about things like that?
Well, to your listeners, if you have the opportunity to ever move country, do it. Why? Because you get to see that there's a whole nother world out there. And I left, my God, 14, 15 years ago. That was 2009. So yeah, 15 years ago. And I've lived now between Germany and Spain. The question, particularly if I think about Spain, is they know how to, we, as I'm going to be Spanish this year, we know how to live well. And I really appreciate that. I think, unfortunately, where I grew up, people have this perspective that in order to live well, then you need to work really, really hard, work crazy hours, and keep up with this whole rat race, as it's called. That's not necessarily always the case in Spain. I have seen these long 2-hour dinners keep going into the night, knowing you've got to work the next day. Apparently, Spain is the place where people sleep the least.
I believe it.
Yeah, right. You know it. So yeah, this is what I would say in terms of the cultural difference. It's people are just enjoying life a little bit more, unfortunately, for American citizens and colleagues. I really think that's the challenge that I see and the difference.
Yeah, I would say that. And first of all, I don't think there's ever any right or wrong. There's always just differences in how people do things. I do think that, generally across the US, people are a little more work and money focused. That in Spain, I've noticed people that the culture is a little slower, life is a little slower, and people prioritize socialization and taking their time a little bit more to meet with friends and have those longer lunches and dinners. Not to say that you can't do those in the US or any other countries, but it seems to be more common in Spain. And again, no right or wrong. Someone in the US might be like, hey, I need to get back to work because I want to accomplish so many things. And someone in Spain may say, like, why? We want to have fun with our friends, right? And it all comes down to your priorities and what you want to accomplish and what you want to get out of life. Going back to culture in companies, you said something about defining the culture. And I'm curious, when you have a really large company, even a mid-sized company, let's say you have over 1,000 employees, it's hard to just tell everybody to think and feel a certain way. How do you think about defining or even influencing culture in a larger company?
You can never mandate culture. It's very different from strategy. In terms of strategy, it's like you're doing this, this is what we're doing, let's move forward. In culture, it's everything to do with human beings. As you know, being a father, you can never mandate your kids to follow what you're doing. Often they have a mind of their own, always. The same thing for individuals at a company and employees. Employees have to believe in the culture. They have to feel that it's aligned with their own personal values and ways of working. This is where the key comes in. That's why you've got to explore it. You've got to connect them to the culture, bring them along. This is change management. And change management is everything to do with people. It aligned with the strategy and project management and program management and all that. We've got to learn what people want and also see if that aligns and how well or not that aligns with the old overall strategic culture or the defined culture, as you mentioned. This is where the sort of nuance or magic comes in. You need to be able to impress people with this culture. Understand that leaders are talking and swimming in the same direction. Even though they continue with their authenticity, leaders need to speak very clearly about the culture and tell the great story of why it's important that everyone is aligned to it. Then there needs to be a voice from others around the world that are representative of different identities that are saying similar things. It doesn't have to be exactly right. You're never going to fully align with a culture between your values. And sometimes you do, and good for you. Like stay in that company and enjoy yourself. But sometimes you don't. And I think it's always important that as an organization, you need to consider, are you willing to lose talent even over a cultural shift or transformation in a company? Because your new values or your new belief system or your new symbols, they don't necessarily align with some of your talent. Are you willing to lose talent in that case? Because that's okay. Yeah. Ultimately, if you decide and you've done your research and you know where you need to go, you say you need to be more innovative, but some people are just way, way more hierarchical and they enjoy that and they come from that sort of space. Well, then maybe they're not the right fit for the company, and that's okay as well. They'll find a better fit. You've got to then, as a strategic organization, you know, Peter Drucker, culture eats strategy for breakfast. So put your culture in your strategy, right? So you've got to then make those decisions yourself and see, okay, am I willing to make those changes and take those risks?
Right. What I'm hearing is, first of all, it's very important for leaders, managers in the company to be aligned with the culture because they're the ones that are, you know, sort of on the front lines communicating that to the people that work with them. And secondly, I'm hearing that, you know, when you are adamant about creating a certain type of culture, that you've got to be willing to almost enforce that and realize that some people are not going to be on board or that they may not come along with you, or you may even need to, as I've seen in my experience working in past companies, let people go if they don't necessarily fit that. But what I'd be curious about, especially given your experience with DEIB and, you know, the wanting to be inclusive, is there's been a movement over the last few years moving, you know, away from, oh, you know, we don't hire for culture fit, we hire for culture addition, right? So how do you think about the balance of, we want people to sort of be aligned with and fit in a certain type of culture, though we also don't want to exclude certain voices just because, you know, right at the beginning, it doesn't seem like they quote fit, but they might actually add to or, you know, help the culture become better.
Beautiful question. I would say, first of all, just to correct you, or maybe I just was a little bit put off by the word enforce, right? Mm. In no way can you, as I said, mandate or enforce a culture.
That was my word, by the way, not yours. So
I know. We're always correcting each other, and feedback is super important. And that's exactly what we're talking about here. Feedback. If you really want to change culture, and also you want to be DEIB, so that means diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging. If you want to be a company that focuses on that, and you should, because any company across all industries needs to innovate, and innovation comes from difference. It comes from the opportunity for people that are coming from different backgrounds, cultures, identities, to bring themselves, their ideas, their questions, their challenges to the leadership, to the organization, to the strategy. So then you got to bake that in to your culture. You got to make sure that you're putting that in the oven and making sure it's nice and expansive and delicious. And in order to do that, you need to then say, and also operate. Operation is very important because culture is say, behave, then operate. This is a systemic thing. So the operations piece, you need to build that into your operations, policies, programs, non-discrimination, no bullying, no retaliation, and then enforce that through your employee relations teams and making sure that the HR system that you've created is also supporting that difference of diversity that you want in your company. So there you go. If people come to the organization and they can't voice their opinions and have that psychological safety, a terminology that was created by a wonderful, wonderful professor at Harvard Business School, her name is Amy Edmondson. And she just, I did my thesis on psychological safety. Psychological safety is the key. And you got to bake that then into your culture. And also, of course, that behavior, that operations, all of those things.
I love that. And Amy Edmondson has been a past guest on this podcast. I somehow pulled her in during the pandemic in 2020, when maybe she wasn't quite as busy. And I think she really kind of blew up after that. And so I don't know if we'll ever be able to get her back. But those that are interested in following Amy, go back and check out that interview as we did as part of our Talent Development Virtual Summit back in 2020. And I love the work that she's done and have learned a lot from her as well in the area of psychological safety. You brought up, I've touched a little bit on diversity, equity, inclusion, belonging, DEIB. I know you've worked in that space as well. And, you know, as a member of the LGBTQ plus community, I know you have a unique perspective on that, but you've also worked in that space with lots of people who are passionate and who are, you know, looking for more equality and inclusion in the workplace. I'm curious, what would you say is the state of DEI or DEIB in the corporate world right now? What are some companies doing well, and what are some things that maybe need to be improved as you look out and maybe you see what's going on in the corporate world, you talk to some colleagues and peers in different places. What comes to mind, or what do you see as kind of the state of DEIB today in 2024?
Great question. And to be honest, it's not a pretty picture at the moment. It used to be really bright and beautiful, especially in 2020 when Black Lives Matter movement really got hold of the world and the eyes of the world. So all these companies started making these big statements around DEI and how important it is and how we're going to make change in the world and all these wonderful things that DEI practitioners are striving for, trying to get up that mountain of inequity that we see across the world and across companies and corporations, governments, everywhere. Now in 2024, the landscape has changed. The mountain is still there, but there's less water to bring down and erode what's going on. So if you think about it in terms of, let's say, what's happening with affirmative action in the United States, I don't know if your listeners know or you know, recently the United States Supreme Court basically overturned, quote unquote, this affirmative action law that exists from the 14th Amendment, which creates equal opportunity for all people under the law, regardless of their identity. And there was a case against Harvard and again, I think against South Carolina, University of South Carolina or North Carolina. I'm sorry if I'm getting that wrong. But generally, they were saying, well, your programs are racist, and people have this terminology of reverse racism, which I do not believe in. And what happened there was they basically said you cannot bring in students only on the basis of race, because there was a case that was submitted that Asian students and white students were being unduly discriminated against. Well, here's the problem with that. Discrimination against certain individuals has existed across the world for a long time, and that's why these programs and laws exist. So if you're going to start doing that and reversing certain protections of individuals, that's very dangerous. And many companies, therefore, have seen that and are anticipating that that might happen. Of course, this is the US, so I'll talk more broadly about the world, but they're anticipating that that might happen, so they're pulling back, they're deinvesting. They're taking away the funding from programs. They're firing their DEI teams. They're not investing in consulting anymore. So the landscape at the moment for us as people, let's say that people are like water trying to slowly erode this mountain of inequity, is a little less powerful. We don't have a lot of movement. Let's say we're frozen. And so what we need to do is melt that water, come together, and start working against that. And what's good that I'll say, the US is sort of going backwards. We know that, Andy. I think that's one of the reasons you left, but at least that's the main reason I've never planned to go back. Sorry, US listeners. But the world across the pond where we live is getting much better. Much, much better. There are new laws that are protecting folks with disabilities. There are new laws that require a certain number of board members on companies to be women. There are new laws that are focused on gender pay equity coming out, pay equality coming out in the next years. Europe is doing quite well, actually, in the space of DEI. And, you know, I have to admit my ignorance. I try my best to learn more. Listeners, if you want to teach me more about APAC and the region of Asia and Australia and all those areas. But to be honest, I'm super proud of what's happening in Europe at the moment. And we're in a good place. And hopefully my DEI, if you're a professional, a practitioner, a culture change practitioner, you know, you're willing to fight the good fight, because you got to be brave. And certainly there's a lot of challenge out there.
Yeah. And the decision you mentioned in the United States by the Supreme Court was a 6-3 decision against it was the University of North Carolina, along with Harvard, as you mentioned, that they could no longer use affirmative action in or need to use affirmative action with regards to admissions. And now that changes a lot of things. And as you mentioned, there's sort of backlash, I think, against some of the DEI movement we've seen over the last few years in some areas of the United States, maybe going a different way in some areas of Europe. As you said, some cultures and some countries are different. So it'll be interesting to see where things go from here. I'm curious, when you think about from a corporate standpoint, what are some important elements in the corporate world of DEI that are not discussed enough? You know, what do you think DEI practitioners or HR professionals or even corporate leaders need to be talking about more, thinking about more when it comes to DEI?
Well, diversity is very diverse. Think about the biodiversity. I told you last night, right? I'm a biologist by training. And there's just so much diversity. Let's go to the Amazon. You know, there's just so many different species and plants and animals. So in the space of DEI, sometimes depending on the culture and the history of an organization, and also the culture and history of that nation or that place where the company primarily operates, folks will focus on those issues. So race and ethnicity, for example, in the United States. Which I think is very important for the United States, especially with given its history of slavery and the oppression of Black people and underrepresented people, of Native Americans, and also immigrants and folks from Latin America. What I'll say, though, is that if you're thinking globally, you're a big company, you're thinking globally, what you need to do is, instead of saying, okay, well, now we're going to focus on disability, which is an underinvested area, or now we're going to focus on ageism, which is also an underinvested area, I'd say. I've heard many, many examples of folks that are later on in their career who are experiencing moments of invisibility that they're passed up for these career opportunities, which is your space, right? And I just think that generally what you need to do is don't try to boil the ocean, but find out what's important to your employees. I wouldn't say you got to focus on transgender rights, which I do think you need to focus on, because that's the big movement across the world. It doesn't matter where you go. You need to focus on the experience of transgender people who are historically double unemployment in the United States compared to the rest of the population, high levels of lack of psychological safety, and talents is right there, but people aren't taking advantage of that. So look for what universality there might exist across different cultures and across the different world. And you need to be very particular about your company. Where do you operate? What are your employees like? But also, very importantly, what type of customers do you have? Because whatever products you're creating, whatever services you're offering, they need to meet the needs of your customers. And how diverse are those customers? So find that data. Everything is about data, Andy. You know, leverage data, leverage research, but also listen to your employees and consider where you can make the most impact in the world.
Yeah, listening to employees, very, very important. And then taking action on that, right? Most of our listeners work in talent development. Everyone's doing engagement surveys, but are you doing anything with that information, with that data, to truly understand who your people are, what they need, what they want, to feel more equality, more belonging, more inclusion? Speaking of that, most of our listeners do work in talent development. How do you advise DEI work with L&D, learning and development, and how can we make our learning programs more inclusive?
This is a key for all companies, right? Talent management, talent development, ensuring that you're enabling your employees to be successful and ultimately make the company successful. DEI is an important and very, very central lens. DEI should be permeant across the entire organization, especially in all these areas of talent development. Why is that? People across different cultures and identities learn differently. They actually, if you go, I don't know if you know Erin Meyer, beautiful work that she's done writing The Culture Map, this beautiful book that I've read so many times at this point. She shares in her research that people learn in different ways, therefore across cultures, but also across identities. So I would be interested in that research. You know, How does learning affect you, your belief? Adam Grant came up with this beautiful terminology called confident humility. And confident humility is something that might exist very easily for people that are of the majority. But people that are coming from less or underrepresented groups, Unfortunately, have had to had I can tell you that right myself. Unfortunately, have had to experience adversity in their life, discrimination potentially, sadly, in their life, which makes them less confident, and maybe therefore will affect their ability to have a growth mindset. This concept from Carol Dweck. Like, do they believe that their talents and abilities are fixed? Or do they believe in a growth mindset that their talents and abilities can evolve, change, grow, and improve? This is where the psychology comes in. When you're coming from an underrepresented group, sometimes you might have experienced a lack of belief that things can change, that you're almost fixed, right? If you experience oftentimes in your life that you're being discriminated against, you might start to unfortunately believe that you're less than and that you're always stuck. You start to create a fixed mindset. So if you're a talent professional, you need to consider this because it's not only about getting your programs out there, getting your enablement structures out there. It's also about enabling folks to believe in themselves and believe that they can actually do the learning. And that's where you need to consider the difference in your company and what those folks might need in order to feel that confident humility. I'm ready to learn. I know who I am, but I'm humble enough to know what I don't know, and I think I can still learn it. That's important.
Yeah.
Empower your people to do that.
Any tips for talent development professionals and how to better incorporate DEIB into the work that they're doing?
Well, partner with folks across the organization. Review, make sure that when you're creating all of your enablement products, that they have a lens through a DEI. So what I usually suggest is you have, quote, change agents or folks across different identities that can review your content and material and share their perspective before you go global. So do some testing, collect data. Everything, as I mentioned, is about data, people and data. Make sure that you are listening to employees, gathering feedback on your programs. And then when you go to market, as I like to call it, and you go selling, because a lot of these talent organizations, they've got to literally sell their work across the world. Well, you need to sell in a consultative way. Your change management and your communications need to meet those needs that you will have learned through that lens of that group who are coming from diverse backgrounds and say, this is important to me, by the way, or I've never learned that way, or I don't communicate that way. So you might need to make some adjustments if you're going to market, for example, in Asia, or if you're talking about leadership, your perspective is very much coming from the United States perspective, but leadership, power distance, for example, if we use that terminology, is different in other parts of the world. So you got to really consider what material you're trying to enable folks with. And also in your enablement, please include diversity and inclusion and belonging and the cultural enablement that's missing in this organization. And that's a key partnership between any DEI professional or practitioner or culture practitioner and that talent team.
Yeah, it starts with awareness and then, looking over the things that you have, the materials, the presentations, the programs, getting feedback on those from different people because they may be able to provide perspectives that you don't necessarily have. We talked about that yesterday with a keynote that I have coming up and started going through it to make sure that it was accessible thanks to a request from a client that I hadn't received before. And I think that's starting to catch on. Other things like that are going to bring more awareness in our space. Mitchell, when you consult with other companies on culture and transformation, what are some of the biggest challenges you see and areas where they end up needing help?
I'm going to say it, and I'm sorry to my clients. Ego is big egos. And I go back to what I said before. Thank you, Adam Grant, and very influential Wharton professor who's written I think he's a PhD in social psychology. And he's focused on how people think and tick. And one of those things that he's learned is, and also Rutger Bregman, who wrote the book Humankind, that as you go up in an organization, as you can get more power, you start to lose your empathy and you start to think more about yourself. And because you want to keep your power and your, and so my biggest challenge in organizations is working with the people that make those decisions and ensuring that they're willing to change. Because you can't ask your organization to change if you're not willing to change yourself. That's really important. And that's the biggest challenge for sure.
Yeah, I can see that. I've been working on, as I mentioned on this podcast a couple of times, working on a new book about leadership. And as I've run lots of programs and worked with lots of leaders for many years. And I think the biggest challenge in leadership is ego. And it's not just ego in terms of like, oh, I think I'm better than anybody else. It's ego in terms of protecting your own well-being and thinking, oh, I better know the answer, or I need to make sure that I control what everybody's doing because I'm afraid of what's going to happen if they do something wrong. Is it going to reflect poorly on me? And when people put the ego aside and just say, I want to do what's best for my team, for the organization, we're able to get a lot more done. But it's hard. It's hard, you know, from a human psychology standpoint, it's a hard thing to do. So I'm glad you brought that up, because I think that's something that is probably not talked about enough that we need to talk about more. The last question I want to ask you, Mitchell, is we are publishing this episode in June, which most people know is Pride Month around the world. You are a member of the LGBTQ plus community. What would you say about the state of equality for LGBTQ and Pride in corporate, and what still needs to be done?
This question, I think, and when you sent me the questions, is probably the hardest question. Why is that? Because like many underrepresented people, when you speak about issues that are representative of your particular group, you feel a sense of responsibility. And oftentimes you'll see that, for example, I've had many conversations with Black employees who feel like they have to represent people that are Black in a way that's coming up and, you know, oftentimes over indexing on the need to be perfect and the need to be. So that to say is, I probably won't be able to get all of it right, but, and so I apologize to anyone in my community that I don't do justice. However, here's what I would say. DEI, as we mentioned before, is becoming a sort of bad term, like diversity. Like, oh God, it's like woke and all these terrible things that are coming up in terms of resistance. As I mentioned before, in the LGBTQ community, we are still struggling across the world. I think oftentimes corporations make the mistake of thinking, well, oh, now we've got a pride organization, we're going to celebrate pride, we've got some policies and everything's fine. No. The world is not accepting in many places in Africa, in parts of Asia, in even parts of Europe and parts of the United States. I come from Missouri and I was not accepted there. I mean, let's talk about the United States, by the way, Andy. Like there's extreme pushback on the rights of LGBTQ community, of the LGBTQ community. Gay people, trans people, lesbian people, bisexual people, intersex people. It's queer generally right now is a tough world. And so organizations should be a safe place for us. They have to be, because outside of those doors, outside of this virtual room, we're facing a lot of pushback and a lot of challenges. So in order for us to be able to, you know, as an organization, create that psychological safety, we need to ensure that we have the policies, programs, and enablement structures that allow LGBTQ plus folks to really live their truth and be able to show up authentically. You know, I'll give you another example. I mean, health insurance. You know, if you're going through a transition, you need health insurance to support you in the United States. Or you better find out, if you're working across the world, what type of provisions that offers. And if it doesn't offer, you know, like in Spain, we have a socialized medicine. Is it covered or not? Could I help my transgender employees in their process by providing that type of benefit? And so benefits need to be universal, and they need to cover all the letters in LGBTQ. And the other thing, it should be gender agnostic, right? There's an example of a great benefit from one of the companies I've worked with, which is that they'll give $10,000 towards any family, regardless of gender, who wants to have their own baby. That's very important to me personally as well. I would love to have my own baby someday. I will say that that is only in the United States, which is discriminatory in a way, because you're not offering the same opportunity for all employees around the world to have that access. So look at the way you are going to market with your benefits. Look at the way your policies are. Are they universal from the LGBTQ space? And they include everyone, including especially transgender folks. And just make sure that you're realizing that people are going through shit in the world outside of work. They better not have to go through it too inside. You better make sure that they're protected.
Yeah. So what I hear is we've made some progress. We have a lot more work to do, and we could use a lot more empathy in our world and our society to provide more for those in the LGBT community and everywhere.
You're so right.
Well, Mitchell, this has been great. Thank you so much for making time to come on. I've been looking forward to having this conversation. I knew there was a lot we could cover with regards to culture and DEI, and I know there's a lot more work that you've been doing in the corporate space as well. And I know we're going to have many great conversations in the future. For people that maybe want to reach out to you to connect or work with you, where's the best place? LinkedIn is the best place to go, or do you have anywhere else?
Yeah, LinkedIn is great. I love LinkedIn. That's cool. I get to learn about you in the same moment that you contact me. So, yes. And then I'll eventually be sharing my new company that I'm starting with the world. And hopefully, there's an opportunity that we could all work together, both from a culture, talent, DEI perspective, but also, of course, new clients and people that want to go through transformation. It's important. We go through it ourselves, our company's got to go through it too.
Love it. Well, I'm excited for that new journey. So go connect with Mitchell. Connect with me if you're not already connected, sharing content on a regular basis. Mitchell, this has been great. Thank you so much again. And we got our bonus Q&A, and I look forward to talking with you more soon.
Awesome. Thank you so much. And thank you to your listeners.
All right. That will do it for my conversation with Mitchell Davis about culture and DEIB. I hope you enjoyed that wide-ranging conversation. Also interesting hearing about Mitchell's own journey from Missouri to Berlin to Barcelona, where Mitchell and I met. And we've had a couple meals together here in Barcelona and gotten to talk, and was just looking forward to learning more from them and sharing with you Mitchell's thoughts on culture and DEI. We talked about identity dimensions and how talent development can work better with a DEI to make programs more inclusive, and what some of the biggest challenges are out there, as well as what's going on in the world of, or at least Mitchell's perspective on the state of LGBTQ equality in corporate America today. So I hope you got some value from that. Stay tuned. Our next episode will be my bonus Q&A conversation with Mitchell Davis. We get into some more of our regular topics there. And I may have Mitchell come join us in the Talent Development Think Tank community to dig in some of these topics of culture and DEI, because I know they are always top of mind for many of you out there, many of our members out there. And just a reminder, the Talent Development Think Tank community is an online community that I run for members of the talent development world to come together, to learn from guest speakers, to learn from each other, to connect, to build your network, and really to accelerate your career success. It's really about helping people in talent development grow in their careers, find more happiness and fulfillment as well. We're always looking for ways to improve. We've got an online platform. We've got a huge library of content. And of course, we have our live calls that happen every other week with some really great guest speakers lined up through the summer. So check that out. And if you prefer attending conferences in person, like we talked about earlier, I am hosting the next Talent Development Think Tank conference on November 6th and 7th in Orlando, Florida. This is going to be unlike any other conference you attend. First of all, it'll be smaller than most of the other conferences out there, way smaller than ATD, much more intimate. It's really about connecting people with each other, learning from each other. We do have some fantastic speakers, but really about learning from each other. And I want you to walk away not only with some knowledge, but with some friends And it's going to be a lot of fun, too. Well worth your time, well worth the ticket price. You will get tons of knowledge and value that you can take back to your company, but also just a lot of life value for you in your life and your career. So make sure you come check that out. All the information on our community and our conference is at tdtt.us, as in Talent Development Think Tank, tdtt.us. Check it out. If you have questions, reach out to me. I'd love to talk.